And we are live and recording the very first podcast episode. Here I am, Mr. Mo, aka the Mohawk, aka Mo Nazrul, aka Papa, along with we have here Mama, aka Emily, aka Human Resource Woman. I don't know. Explain about yourself. I don't know. What do we call you?
Talent manager.
Mrs. Talent manager.
Talent manager. That sounds good. Mrs. Talent manager. Hey, this is Emily.
And welcome to our first show.
Yeah. So basically what we want to do is that we have very interesting conversations all the time. And this is our way of recording all our weird conversations and seeing what we come up with.
Yeah. Yep. So yesterday when we were on the way back from Kuala Lumpur, we were on a short break for Hari Raya
KL.
Yes, for Hari Raya festivities. So of course on the way back from KL, we kind of like got...
We got into a really deep discussion. We were talking about, in general, you know, not promoting anything, but we were talking about like, you know, different countries and different... political systems, and I was sharing a bit about what I knew about history, because I did learn about World War II. I did learn about Karl Marx. The thing is, right, remember I told you yesterday, like there was a saying by Karl Marx. I'm not promoting anything,
right?
You know, just discussing a person's ideas that spawned off into something, like, you know, how some countries they had democracy, other countries had communism. And I was saying that in Karl Marx's opinion, capitalist then evolves to democracy, then evolves to communism, then socialism, then sort of like a perfect society.
Right.
He looked at it all as a evolution of each other.
Yep.
So I actually found that. I'm gonna start Googling right here. Hold on. Starts with a K. Karl Marx. Democracy and communism? I think it's something like that. Okay, let's try that.
Let's just try and look at that one.
So, oh, there we go. Democracy in Marxism. This is right. What I wanted to say. Okay. So, Karl Marx and Frederick Engels stated in the something called the Communist Manifesto, and it says that the first step in the revolution by the working class is to raise the proletariat to the position of ruling class to win the battle for democracy and universal suffrage, being one of the first and foremost important tasks of a militant proletariat. So basically what he means by that is that between a capitalist and communist society, there lies this period of revolutionary transition,
right?
From democracy to communism, something like that. So,
between
basically,
capitalist and okay.
Yeah, because you sort of need capitalist and democracy to sort of create the business aspect of things, because you know, like, democracy and capitalism is very individual, business centric. You know, like, you can own assets and stuff. That communism is how it was practiced before. Is sort of like just the state owns everything, you know, and then now you're starting to see that, like, you know, it does sort of need that sort of transition, because, like, communism does need elements and foundations of democracy to be a proper thing. And then the communism aspect of, like, dividing the wealth keeps it from being, like, ruled by the 1%, so to speak. So that's sort of like the idea. I mean, but that was a crazy idea they was talking about. Like, so basically what we're trying to say is, we're not promoting anything. We have very interesting conversations as husband and wife.
Right, that's right. But in your opinion,
in
your opinion, what's going to happen to America moving forward? Are they going to, if democracy is a life cycle, where are they heading? That's question number one. And question number two would be for China.
How is China
going to turn out, seeing that 5G it's being they are spearheading the whole 5G, you know, new space race right now.
I got a bit. I'm actually quite surprised to have witnessed the rise of China, so to speak, in the last decade. It's just amazing. I mean, like, once upon a time, made in China was not a thing like you want to be proud of, you know?
Correct.
You wanted something designed in America or something. I don't know what it means. Like, you know, it's like made in San Francisco or whatever.
Yeah. It's the whole impression that you get, right?
Yeah.
When you see things that is made in China,
yeah,
the impression that anything that is made in China, it's going to be inferior.
Yeah, but the thing is, it ended up like they build everybody's everything. And like, I started seeing documentaries on YouTube and stuff that like this is one market that was crazy. This host, I can't remember what video it was. He was going around in this part of China. And what happened was he just like found random pieces of handphones and like he basically made his own handphone from scratch, like from different pieces, and he put it together. Of course, people in the comments said like the phone would explode and stuff like that. But like in retrospect, like even a Samsung phone explodes.
Correct.
Know? So if you can build a phone from just the main components and stuff like that, you know, and you can have just a market where the normal citizen can make that. That's impressive, because the thing is also at the same time, I'm starting to also see China was very much ahead in the mobile gaming, because like I did a lot of esports lately, right? You know, so in the esports world, I've noticed that a lot of the games that keeps trending are coming out of China.
Oh yeah,
you know, and they're doing crazy things with the mobile phone that people didn't think was possible. Like for example, the games like Mobile Legends, PUBG. I know you're not into games and stuff like that, you know, but in retrospect, just looking at China growing from all aspects, from software and hardware, it's pretty crazy how they went up in the past 10 years. You know, I gotta be honest. But in terms of America,
so you know, what you're saying is basically in the last 10 decades, with the rise of 4G back then, America was the winner. They are always the one that on the forefront.
The yeah.
But right now, I don't know what actually happens, that they kind of like missed the mark and they are kind of like being slow.
And it came out of nowhere. In a way,
it all started with Korea and Samsung taking over Apple. If we want to see it from that kind of perspective, that kind of milestone, if that's the milestone that we're looking at.
Yeah, that's
Apple winning the race first, and then after that, they start to slow down. Maybe with the demise of Steve Jobs, have anything to do with it?
Okay, well, see, the thing is, we were also talking. Actually, we started talking about all of this because we're talking about Apple and Steve Jobs. You know, because the thing is, when we were young, see, the thing is, me and my wife, we've been together for a very long time. So the thing is, like, you know, we've been through so many evolutions of our own personality, from like being a student to being a young work executive, you know, advertising, whatever, you name it. So back in our earlier days, especially when we were in university, in college, having an Apple meant you were cool.
Exactly.
You know, like people, like right now, people maybe don't look at Steve Jobs the same way that we did in university, but like I remember the cult of personality around Steve Jobs was crazy.
Correct.
That guy could do no wrong.
I mean, come on, he was the first one that started the whole iPod. Was a real revolution.
If
you come to think about it, when we were students, we were still using Walkman, and we'll still be carrying our CDs around.
Yeah, that was pretty crazy.
Yeah, and then something like iPod just totally changed our world, where you only carry one device that can store up to 10,000 songs.
And the thing is, I remember getting into MP3s, like, you know, MP3 players. This is before the iPod.
MP3 players, but it was only for a while. MP3 players just had short... short, what do you call that?
It had a very short lifespan. It wasn't like... it didn't last very long.
Correct.
And then when the iPod came, then everybody wanted an MP3 player. Technically, an iPod is a glorified MP3 player.
Okay, I can give you that. Give you that.
But the thing is, it was just so cool. There was so much attached to it. And the thing is, it's interesting to note and see as well, because like our generation was very influenced by a lot of brands and stuff like that, right? And I'm starting to notice like a lot of the younger generation after us, like, you know, our younger... people like newer, younger adults.
Right.
You know, they tend to be a bit more pessimistic about brands. Like, I remember like when we were in university or just graduated or just worked, for some reason, it was very important to have an Apple computer, or it was very important to have this bag or that bag, that look. And it's very refreshing to see, like, a lot of the university students nowadays, like, you know, they adopt the whole, like, Mark Zuckerberg sweatshirt, like, I don't
hobo
care.
Looking, yep.
Hope, yeah. Yeah, like, I'm borderline homeless look, you know, that kind of stuff, you know, and they don't care, you know, as opposed to us, hobo we came up more from a more prim and proper,
yeah.
Like, you know, eyebrows had to be slim and plucked, you know, hair had to be gelled a certain way.
Correct, correct. And now there's no demand for Apple anymore.
If you can just Google,
Apple is no longer the first market, the market, what do you call that? The
market leader.
Market leader anymore.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, in retrospect, like, going through the whole journey of, like, the whole Steve Jobs era of Apple, I think he wasn't such a great person in the sense where, like, he just knew how to play up the shock value of what he built.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I said, the MP3 player. There were MP3 players before the iPod.
Mm-hmm.
But when the iPod came, it's just like, this is an MP3 player, but it's not. It's 1,000 songs.
10,000 songs.
10,000. Was it 10,000 songs?
Yeah. Actually, that was the unique selling
point. It played
up on
your desire. It was like, you know. You
yes.
Know.
Yeah. It was a cult. Apple was a cult during Steve Jobs' time. But after that, people just... I don't know. It's the whole... their design thinking is not as sharp as they used to.
Yeah.
There's nothing that they have come up since Steve Jobs' demise that can really have any hook on our... on any consumer, on the consumers anymore.
Yeah, everything seems to be the exact same thing. And the iPhone is the exact same iPhone.
Yes.
You know, it's just with a better camera or something.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing.
There's nothing to wow the consumers anymore.
I mean, let's put it this way. You know, mm-hmm. as crappy as the Samsung flip phones are, and how disastrous the whole scandal is with the fact that the phones were breaking in a single day after people bought it.
Mm-hmm.
At least Samsung is trying.
Yep.
You know what I like? Look, you know, that used to be what Apple did. Yep. You know, they came out with the iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
It had such like crappy Wi-Fi or like, you know, it, like receptors on it, right? Like
right.
when you held the phone, like you couldn't get any reception for some strange reason. And then instead of saying the phone is broken, they just went, it's like, no, you're holding it wrong. You know,
yeah.
Like they had such a control grip on people's minds that even the people were saying like it's a crappy phone, somehow they made you doubt yourself. It's like, is it a crappy phone,
or are
you just holding it wrong? You
yeah.
know, now you need this rubber band thing to wrap around your iPhone. Uh-huh. It's a casing now. You know, like so it's crazy how Apple
manipulated.
Yeah, you know, the thing is like, you know, there's really no reason to have different. Types of plugs.
Mm-hmm.
But like every iteration of a laptop, like for example, you know, you're using like a PowerBook, you can't use the same plug for the next generation of PowerBook. It's crazy. You know, they purposely make it.
Do they still do that? I've lost touch with I MacBook Apple.
I think the last Apple product we got was the iPad. That was it. It was the iPad. I can't remember what iPad it was.
Well, the kids still have iPad.
Yeah. So it's, well, then again, it was the more current generation of iPads, so it's going to be around for a while. So,
mm-hmm,
so,
mm-hmm.
But essentially, I can't tell the difference between that iPad
and the old one
and the first generation iPad that we found in a closet when we were moving. It's like it's like I said, it's exactly the same thing, just a thinner plate.
Yeah, thinner one, definitely. Yep. I just want to comment on that. That the difference is that it's more. The latest one would be more thinner and lighter.
Yeah.
Yep. Sleeker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think as we were also talking about like companies and organizations, you know, and how it spawned to Steve. Wow,
that was the reason why it spawned to Steve Jobs, because we were saying that if a company really heavily depend on only just one person or one person persona, one person show, everything is on that one rock star.
Yeah.
Then the company actually is gonna doom for failure.
Exactly.
A company would definitely must have their own business impact analysis. They must have their own business continuation analysis as well. Because just in case your CEO dies, what's gonna happen?
Wow, that's quite morbid,
isn't it? Yes, we were just talking about it.
It's exactly like you were saying. When Steve Jobs, the CEO, died, horrible as it is, the company just went like,
yes, and we were just saying that I'm sure they do have like a company like Apple, a multi-million company like Apple would definitely have their own business. There's two things that we call it: business impact analysis and also business continuation analysis. They definitely have those, but it's just that maybe they weren't expecting Steve Jobs to die so early.
Oh yeah, I don't.
We were just saying that they definitely have their BCAs and BIAs, but it just so happens that the untimely demise of Steve Jobs kind of like really put a jam into Apple's whole succession planning shit.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the thing is, what people forget, right? Apple was a very crappy company before Steve Jobs came back in. Like, for example, when it first started off, I remember my first contact with Apple was the I think it was the Macintosh, that like really old clunky, it was part of the IT lab, you know. Remember how big IT
hold
was
on. Hold on, are you saying those Apple that is multicolored?
It's like
when you have your computer class, right?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. You had your computer class, and then you had Oregon Trail. That was the most exciting thing on the computer, like Oregon Trail.
Yeah. So those were before. Those were pre Steve Jobs. And what actually makes Steve Jobs really ahead of his curve is because he really take into consideration human values, design, typographies, things that usually engineers or, you know, people who are more on the engineering side does not pay attention to.
He just did it different from Windows. See, this is what people forgot. Right. People forgot how amazing Windows was.
Amazing?
I thought Windows was pretty amazing when it came
out. When you said that like Windows Microsoft is amazing, Microsoft is amazing, but what is it that makes Steve Jobs more amazing than Windows?
Oh, basically, he just made Apple products for rich people, and Microsoft Windows was for, like, in a way, normal poor people. Because the thing is, the Windows was so functional. You know, the thing is, and you came out, you could play games, you could do your work.
Yeah, there's productivity.
I remember what computers used to look like, you know, with like DOS and the green screens and stuff like that, right? So when Windows came, or at least for me as a kid, you know, growing up, you know, and the thing is, we grew up in a weird generation where we knew what it was like before the internet, before computers.
We were the last generation. Yeah, exactly.
So before Apple, Windows blew my mind. I don't know about you. It blew my mind. And I loved like computer games.
Before Apple, Windows blew your mind. Okay. I did not grow up in a house that has a computer. I only get to play computer, not play, but, you know, to learn the functional aspect of computer in computer class.
Oh.
Actually, when was the first time that I got...
What was the first time you saw a computer?
My relationship with computer starts, right? Since we're going to segue into Society 5.0.
Society 5.0.
I mean, that's a very good question that we can post to everybody who listens to us, and they can drop us a comment.
Yeah.
Or, a comment on our YouTube channel. Can you remember when is your relationship with computer starts?
Oh, me?
As in to our listeners out there.
Okay. Let us know.
Let us know.
Wherever we post this, be it on Spotify or YouTube, on YouTube or whatever it is.
Let us know
in the comment section. What age were you when you
first... When you start your first love affair with computers, right? And because once you started your affair with computers, like as in relationship with computers, it won't stop. Because we're going to go into Society 5.0 after this. It will never stop. So when was the first time that you had your first relationship with computers?
Okay,
so for myself would be, as I said, it was in our school computer room, and where we had to learn how to use it, because I think that they were trying to prepare school children, you know, on use computer moving forward.
Yeah, it was the same with me. Right. But how old were you though?
Like, and it was a floppy disk thingy. So I think
Oh my god, floppy disks.
Yes.
Oh, do you remember laser discs? Big like DVD things? Oh, I used to.
No, laser disc is before floppy disk, right? After floppy disk.
I oh my god! Wow, now it's all flooding back to me now. Here's the thing. So I remember floppy disk, and you're right. My first exposure to computers was, I think, at the age of 8 or 9 years old. Mm-hmm. I think about there. It could be earlier. I could be 7, but I could be wrong. I think it was about 8 years old for me. How old were you, do you think, roughly?
Well, I definitely have already started schooling. I was in primary school. So maybe I was about 7 or 8.
Yeah.
Yes.
And here's the cool thing. Do you remember how advanced you were if you knew how to use a floppy disk?
That's correct. I don't remember what I had to do. Like, what was the task that was given by the teacher to teach us? I don't remember that.
But you know what was scary? Because the thing is, I had siblings and they were babies too, right?
Right.
And what was scary was at like every generation, like, you know, like my younger sister and my younger sister and stuff, as they came up and grew up and stuff like that, right? It was funny how as they were babies, they slowly adopted the technology really fast. Like, Nabila knew how to use my sister. Like,
yeah, Nabila.
She knew how to use the floppy disk before any... Like how Kai knows how to use the iPad now. Okay. So she knew how to use floppy disks.
Okay.
And then Nasira came about, she knew how to use CDs.
Okay.
Stuff like that. So like every generation... Like, it was interesting to see the growth and how every generation after mine integrated technology into their growing up. Like right now, Kai...
Right.
You know, he doesn't have floppy disk. He doesn't.
Yes.
But he's so advanced with the iPad one.
Yes, he like, will know how to drag, swipe.
Yeah.
Unlock.
Yeah.
Who thought? Well, basically, okay. One, it will be maybe they learn from observation.
Definitely from observation.
Yes, and secondly, it's basically it's the design of everyday things.
Yeah.
How the designer put into, how it's just that you don't have to.
Actually,
think
that,
about how you want to use it.
That is what was frustrating with Apple, and at the same time, what Apple did right.
Huh,
like I used to remember. Remember when I was using your PowerBook?
Yes.
And then I transitioned to the iPad.
Okay.
So that was the beginning of like the simplifying of everything. You know, so the iPad was so simplified. Like documents was so simplified. You know, it became so intuitive, you know, rather than the laptop
intuitive,
version.
Intuitive, yeah, that's right, sorry.
Like the laptop version, for example, like, you know, you still had the Windows aspect to it. So like, the thing is about, like, Windows or the earlier, like, operating systems for laptops on the Apple products was that it was still complicated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it still gave you a lot of options, you know. But what intrigued me about the iPad, like the first generation of the iPad or the iPhones, they were just like, we don't care. We just give you the bare bones.
Okay.
You know? So like for example, and I was amazed at how apps developed and simplified things. Like how it went from document apps or productivity apps on an iPad first generation.
Okay.
So like the phones now, where you have video apps that can pre-edit your videos without you even editing.
Okay.
Like right now, if I look on my Samsung phone, right, the Galaxy S9.
Yeah, they already have it prepared for you.
That's scary.
So that is basically... AI already? Where they basically have virtual assistants. Like,
it's
basically
crazy.
It's virtual assistants for you.
I will show you right now on my phone. I will show you right now.
Like, I know what you mean,
this
is
crazy. Like, see, okay, so like the gallery, right? You click stories. This freaked me out a little bit. It freaked me out just a little bit, but also intrigued me. Like, for example, right? So I click the stories and you have like Hari Raya Puasa Day 2, Malacca.
Wow.
You don't have to do it. Any of this?
Yes.
Like, this is all AI. And the thing is, like, you know, it's scary and intriguing at the same time. Yeah. So
would it be cool if like this podcast would be the computer or whatever software that you use can just auto-generate it? Then we don't have to...
I think it's possible. Like, say for example, right now, right? Like, so at this very moment, we're recording all these GIFs that I use for my live streams and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You know? So but we have the audio of what we're doing, which is a podcast.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we put this video into my phone and put it into that app, it will automatically edit this video.
Yeah, that would be cool. It would really definitely going to save time.
Yeah,
save our time,
right?
It would
definitely save time. You know, but the thing is, all the same time, I got to be honest, though. I don't think I'll be editing much. I think we have a pretty good flow in terms of, like, what's the conversation.
Yeah, that's correct. So we're going to like segue into, I suppose, Society 5.0.
Okay, yeah. What is Society 5.0? I've heard you mention that.
Yeah. So, like, I actually did not know about Society 5.0 until about 4 months ago, where I was having conversation with one of my human resource business partner friend who works in human resource.
Right.
She was just telling me that, you know, Penang or Malaysia in general, we're still talking about Industry 4.0, right? Yeah. So industry, I think either it's Industry 4.0 or Industrial Revolution 4.0. Either one is basically about what the life that we are living right now. So 4.0 is basically everything that we do, it's already automated or cashless. Or think about how you are actually doing a lot of transaction without using real money, paper money anymore. You're doing online banking, you're doing online shopping, you're paying things with your GrabPay and whatnot. So all those things are epitome of Industry Revolution 4.0,
right?
So we're still talking about this. But in Japan, they are already talking about Society 5.0. And what Society 5.0 means, it's basically how humans live their life as a society together with machines.
What, you mean like cyborgs?
Cyborg, yes.
Here's the funny thing. I gotta admit though. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm very intrigued that it is the Japanese of all people. Like, when you think Japanese, right, you think they would be the first one to use like mechanized robots. You know what I mean?
They were the one that come up with the Honda, that robotic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Robot, very yep. humanized robot, yep. right?
They
were the first ones to come up with
Japanese
that.
Japanese thing to do is like, yes. you know, Society
5.0. Yeah,
like, so, you know, robots and humans together in harmony. I'm like, damn, that's so
Japanese thing to do. Yes, so it's very interesting because if you think about it, right, like we're moving, there's no stopping Industry 4.0. There's no stopping how we interact with machines.
Yeah.
And we are also already having, you know, artificial intelligence stuff.
Yeah.
The phone that you were showing me just now about how, you know, your apps can actually generate content for you
like
already.
Korean. This is Korean made.
Yes.
Korea.
So there's no stopping it already. But basically, and we were just talking about, how a society should be in that sense, right? Can you imagine living in Society 5.0?
Oh yeah, we were also talking about or at least one of the topics I was touching into, like how, in a way, in the future, like, you know, we were talking about AI as well, AI and like robots replacing certain professions,
mm-hmm.
like, you know, how they were saying professions like lawyers.
Oh yeah, we were talking about
laborers,
that.
Laborers.
Yeah, yeah. That will be definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, you know. So the thing is, like, I was thinking about it. Like, what would happen if AI came about? Because we're so close to it. Like, you know, what if AI came about? What if the robot revolution came about? And then all jobs. I'm talking about every single job.
It's automated.
Flipping burgers.
And,
To doing your taxes, to doing your lawyering, to doing your policing, your governing, all automated. Imagine that.
Because you already, for all those things to happen, you need big data, you need analytics, you need algorithm, and it's going to happen, baby, where your accountant is going to be a robot.
Exactly. you know, and then the thing is with say for example 5G right now, like super, was it Daily News?
Trevor Noah.
Yeah. You know, basically, so we were saying about 5G, how it revolutionized everything. Like, you know, and I was thinking to myself, it's like, yeah, what if I never thought that the internet would be so powerful? Like, and to see it, like, transition from then and now. And the thing is, and that's why I was talking about, like, in the future, like, you know, I think societies that have some sort of, like, basic income or, like, a very, I don't know, socialistic idea of welfare. You know?
Correct. You need a government to basically, the type of government that a Society 5.0 should have will be the one that's socialistic in nature.
Yeah.
Where, because if you as a person is being replaced by a robot in terms of your job, you're going to lose your loss of income, right? You're going to suffer from loss of income.
Exactly. And the thing is, you need to find other avenues. And the thing is, I do believe, like, you know, working with like esports teams and live streamers and stuff like that, I think that the profession everybody would start getting into is content creation.
Okay.
You know, because a lot of things can be content now. You know, like, you know, there are people who are like, I remember watching this live streamer. All he did was work out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he just lift up weights and stuff like that. He gives people advice and stuff like that. But he's doing something that most people would generally have once upon a time done in private.
Mm-hmm.
Unless they were recording a documentary or they were Arnold Schwarzenegger or something like that, you know?
Right.
But the idea is, because I was talking to a lot of people, especially when we're talking about like content for live stream, you know, it's very different from a TV show.
Right.
A TV show is very structured, very... got moving parts. It has an introduction, it has a middle, it has like, you know, ins and outs. But a live stream is more like a window into somebody's life.
That's true.
You know? So I think what happens is that, like, what's going to happen is that as more and more professions get taken over by robots or AI eventually, I think people within society would need one basic income to survive.
Right.
Because they would need to figure out creative ways in being a productive, creative member of society, whether it be like content creation or like, you know, it's more thinky based stuff. I don't know, you know, more intellectual based things, you know, like, you know, maybe like writing novels, you know, like, you know, or things for entertainment, or thinking about like how theoretical physics came about with Einstein, you know, all these thought processes, all these like journals and stuff like that, you know.
But do you think Society 5.0 is going... sorry, the question that I want to ask you is like, how soon do you think that Society 5.0 is going to come to Penang? Or sorry, Malaysia in general, to Malaysia?
Yeah.
But when, if you come to think about it, once the answer that I would probably give is that once 5G is launched,
yeah,
that's when the start of a new era.
See, the thing is, okay... Start of a new era is one thing, but another thing, I think what it is more than anything else is the rise of Asia.
Oh, wow. In general, yes, that's true.
Across the board, you know what I mean? Because a lot of the Asian countries once upon a time were either former colonies or they were torn up by American wars or split up by American wars. But what you're starting to see now is there's a little bit more synergy within Asian countries. Like, say, for example, especially in regards to esports, I think I saw a statistic somewhere. It said that, like, I think 56% of the esports consumers came from Asia, you know, and like places like Seoul, Korea. The reason why esports started coming out from Seoul, Korea, because Seoul, Korea had the best internet in the world.
So, for everything, it has to start with the best. For anything to happen, you must have the best internet.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, but the thing is, it was just funny because like Asia, as a whole, you know, started. Just came out of nowhere, you know.
Yeah.
Like you know, you're starting to see a lot more Asian representation, you know, even in Hollywood movies, like Crazy Rich Asians. You know, we have people like Henry Golding from Malaysia. Suddenly, it's like, oh my God, he's in a Hollywood movie, you know.
Yeah.
So the thing is, it's just like there is.
These are all signs.
These are all signs that Asia is coming up.
Yes.
There is quality talent that's being poached by the Western society and Western media.
And we just watched Always Be My Baby from it's a new Netflix movie. It's pretty much an all Asian cast. The one that we just saw. With the exception of Keanu Reeves, of course.
Yeah, okay. Well, oh yeah, Keanu Reeves. Yeah, I got to see that. So well, tell me more about the show, because it's a Netflix thing.
It's basically start these two fresh off the boat cast. The lady, it's Ellie Wong.
The comedian.
She's a comedian, but she's also a writer for Fresh Off the Boat. And the guy, yeah.
He was the dad. The guy's the dad.
The guy's the dad in Fresh Off the Boat.
Yeah.
Yes. So basically, it's a the story is basically is just general love story. You know, when they were young, they were love. They had crush on each other, but they never. You know.
Oh.
It's unrequited love kind of situation, and they grew apart, and then now they come back, and you know they love each other as an adult. That kind of, you know, what do you call that kind of love again? Like when you're young, teenage love, and then
puppy love. Would you call it puppy love?
Yes,
I think it's called puppy love.
Yes, they pretty much revisited back their puppy love era. But besides that, it's just basically another story that you would think it's just a general love story, but it's being played by Asian cast. So it's the second time that we see this happening.
Yeah.
All previously was the Crazy Rich Asians.
Yeah.
But even before that we have that this sitcom that I like to watch that stars Josh Chan. Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
Crazy Ex-Girlfriend,
yeah. So that is like pretty much the first time that I see you have the majority of the cast is mostly Asian.
You know, and
from
and,
that, yeah.
So and the thing is, it's not just like Oriental Asian in a sense where it's like the Chinese country.
Yeah,
sorry, like,
they
sorry,
also
I'm
have
Chinese. I'm sorry.
They
like
also
China,
have the subcontinent
Korean,
of India.
Japanese, yep. It's also India as well. Like the thing is, what I enjoyed was like, say for example, the last Jurassic Park movie, Jurassic World or whatever it is, the one with Chris Pratt.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The CEO of Jurassic Park was somebody of Indian ethnicity. You know. Like
really,
like, yeah,
I can't
exactly.
recall. Okay.
Yeah, you know, I mean, like maybe watch back the Jurassic Park. But the thing is, it was cool because it was interesting to see someone, you know, of a non-cliche race as the CEO. You know, it was just like, oh wow, this Indian guy. You know.
Oh yes, now I remember.
Yeah. So I mean, he died obviously, but like I mean, what I meant was like it was nice to see that there, like there's was. Representation,
yeah, and it's not playing the janitor or what, right?
Yeah,
they're playing
the
CEO
exactly.
in a
playing
Jurassic
CEO,
World movie.
Exactly, you know.
So yeah, we're beginning to see the acceptance of Asian culture.
Yeah,
cultural footprint Asia is there already.
True, and the funny thing is like back to those of Indian ethnicities. It's also kind of funny how a lot of the superhero movies are also having villains who are ethnically Indian as well. It's like as if like for some reason when it comes to like tech or crazy robotic stuff is like someone of Indian ethnicity is like, oh, you know, super villain. Can't remember what movie it was.
That's just stereotype, right?
Yeah, a little bit. It's almost like stereotyping. Yeah. But you're seeing that as well, you know, that there is,
well, yeah, you have the pros and cons, you have the good and the bad ones.
Yeah.
So Yeah, well, basically we see more Asian representation already.
Yeah.
So being peppered, those are basically the signs that we slowly see Asia rising up. And now with the whole 5G.
What movie was it? No, let me continue. I'm just gonna figure out. There was a superhero movie, a recent one, superhero movie. Marvel or is it DC? I'm gonna look at it like Aquaman villain. Aquaman villain. Is it Aquaman?
Aquaman. I don't know. I don't watch movies that much.
Yeah, I know. I don't watch movies too. That's the funny thing.
Society 5.0 Rise of Asia. So.
Yeah, okay, so back to Society 5.0. What is Japan doing?
Let me just Google. Anyway, there is a... don't know whether you'll be interested or not, but there will be a... on June 17 to 21st June in Kuala Lumpur, is going to be Malaysia Tech Week 2019.
Venom. I'm sorry, that was the movie I was talking about. I'm sorry to interrupt you. It was Venom.
What movie and what?
With Tom Hardy. Venom.
Know. Oh, yeah. Oh, the Orang Jahat. Correct.
Yeah, Venom.
Yeah, it's Indian ethnicity. Yeah. So we're seeing more Asians now.
Yeah, what was his name?
So we're seeing more Asians representation, not only Riz Ahmed.
Riz Ahmed. Wow, it's not even Indian. It's Middle Eastern.
Yeah.
Riz Ahmed.
Where is he from?
Rizwan
Pakistani.
Riz Ahmed, also known as Riz MC, is an English actor, what the rapper and activist of Pakistani descent.
I know, that's so cool.
As an actor, he has won one Emmy Award out of two Emmy nominations. And
so
also
he's
nominated
gonna
for
be the up and coming guy.
Wow.
So we have Riz Ahmed.
I'm sorry, I got it wrong.
As villain. In Venom, we have Crazy Rich Asian. We have
Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. It's kind of interesting how like the actors of Middle Eastern ethnicity are also starting to come up as well. Mm-hmm, like for example, what was the guy from Mr. Robot did the Bohemian Rhapsody?
Totally
Rami Malek.
Rami
Malek. Rami Malek. Yeah.
We're coming up.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, it's interesting to see more diversity and stuff of that, you know, but like, yeah, it's fun.
Let me say, I'm so sorry.